We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown!
Touchdown by Moore.
And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. 1, 2, 3. Keep pounding.
All right, Panthers fans, welcome back. It's another edition of the Roar Podcast. John Ellis here along with my friend Billy Marshall. Long weekend, extended weekend for the Panthers, obviously, coming off a 3-0 start. We're going to break down the Houston game as we come to you on a Monday night. It's got some trade action happening here. Billy and I are going to talk about that as well. What's up, my man?
Pretty busy last few days here for this franchise.
Yes, indeed. We're going to dive right into it. CJ Henderson, former first-round pick for the Jaguars, breaking news earlier today, was traded to the Panthers in exchange for tight end Dan Arnold and a third-round pick. The Panthers are also, looks like, sending a fifth-round pick. Actually, the Jags are sending a fifth-round pick back to the Panthers. So a little wheeling and dealing for Scott Fitterer. Before we dive into the Texans recap, Billy, I know you have some thoughts on this deal. I do too. Let's start with you. What do you make of this trade?
Yeah, so I think there's four different components that need to be discussed when we kind of discuss this trade and kind of look at the calculus of how it affects this franchise. The first one is CJ Henderson, the player. The second one is CJ Henderson off the field. The third is a compensation. And finally, I do think we should mention Dan Arnold's in this trade too. But I'll start with the first two, and that's CJ Henderson, a player on and off the field. Okay, so many of you who followed me knew I was not a huge fan of him coming out in the draft. I thought he was my cornerback four. I had Jeff Okuda, Jalen Johnson, and Christian Fulton right ahead of him. And three of those guys I thought were first-round talents. I thought Henderson was kind of like an early second-round type player. I just didn't feel he was a very good tackler. And for this defense especially, you have to tackle. I just think Matt Bowen has mentioned it many times, not even on here, but on different shows too. Good defenses, they tackle. Look at the improvements of Dante Jackson from his rookie year to now. He's one of the best tacklers, in my opinion, at the cornerback position in the NFL. So I don't know if that's necessarily a technique thing or if it's just an effort thing, but in college, especially in 2019, which was his final year, he wasn't the best tackler. And I just thought his tape was very inconsistent. Like, he goes up against guys like Jamar Chase and he plays really well. But then the next week he's going up against, you know, like an FSU with Tamorian Terry, who I believe was undrafted. And he's just letting them run right by. I don't know if that's just inconsistency in his own game, effort. But it was, that's why I felt that the third men were props. Now let's get to how he did last year. Last year with Jacksonville, he was okay. He was the fourth best rookie corner. Certainly could have rules. But looking at his Pro Football Focus grades, I understand it's not the end be all. He had a 57.9 overall grade. There were a few games where he really stood out, and they were against the Indianapolis Colts, which was week one. And he also played really well against the Green Bay Packers and Lambeau. He was facing Davante Adams that entire game, and he did a pretty decent job. And he also forced a fumble on Adams too. So I think there's still some long-term potential with him, just because, like, if you read like a bunch of different guys who used to be cornerbacks, like Will Blackman or Dominique Foxworth, Eric Crocker, especially, he does a lot of great work covering corners. He had C.J. Henderson rated as his top cornerback. And I think the reason why a lot of former corners love Henderson's game is just because, like, he possesses like the prototype that you want to see in a modern cornerback. Like, he has the athleticism and he has some high instincts, but it's just at times he just doesn't put it all together. And so that can lead to inconsistency. So for me, I feel that he is a long-term project as a player. I do think that it's not going to be overnight where he can just immediately solve the issues of Horn's departure. But I think maybe in 2022 or 2023, they can potentially reap some rewards. And just to add on to that, I do have to mention the off-field things. Okay. And now there's nothing too serious about it. I want to reference a guy who covers the Jaguars really well, and he has a lot of insight into the NFL because I did a thread on it. And I feel like this is, you just have to keep it in mind. Okay. So C.J. Henderson, he's been dealing with some stuff, all right, personal related matters. And a lot of it has to not necessarily have to do with anything besides, does he really love playing football? Does he really want to play football? And according to he goes by Dilla on Twitter, and you can find him on Twitter at @E_Dilla. He said that he contemplated retirement this past offseason. And he didn't say that just because, you know, Jacksonville's a joke or whatever reason, blah, blah, blah. There was a comment that he made last year when he intercepted Rivers and had like his best game, where he said he's just never been a big football fan. And that's fine. Like, there's a lot of people, like, you can go to any hedge fund in New York City. You can talk to any of those guys who are graduating from Ivy League programs. They don't like doing what they do, but they do it because they're really good at it and it pays a lot of money. So it shouldn't be surprising to hear that. I just want to throw that out there that he has to get like in the right mental headspace, because there was also a story here where, the Jaguars head coach and one of their other defensive coaches had to go to his house and talk to him about playing. So I just want to keep that in mind. That's the off-field things. And I do think it's relevant to this discussion, and that because I don't want anyone to think that this is just going to turn this franchise overnight, like this decision. I do think it will take time to get him in the right mental headspace, because this isn't just, you know, a thing that can, get better like within a month or so. It takes a while for trust to be built and just everything to kind of really materialize on and off the field. So as far as that goes, I think I'm fine with the compensation. We'll discuss that in a bit later, and the ramifications of the tight end position. But I just wanted to throw that out there about my feelings on the player on and off the field.
Good insight. You know, I think Dilla does a great job. He's sort of a Jags insider, does some great stuff with following that beat. So he's worth a follow out there. And yeah, you know, look, I read up on some of this trade. I was traveling back from Hilton Head today, and it kind of hit me on the road here. So I've just had a little chance to catch up. I read Joe Person's write up on The Athletic, and it was Charlie Strong, you mentioned, that met with Henderson at his apartment to, quote, help him get back on track, as Strong put it. Some of the off the field stuff you mentioned, and that does concern me. You know, obviously, you know, you never want to see that. There's some injury concerns too, Billy. I want to get your thoughts on this. You know, obviously he's coming back from some issues. He had the COVID issue. Obviously that's going to happen. But he had a couple of issues last year, shoulder, had a labrum surgery this off season, had a groin issue, played half the season, basically last season. Do you have any thoughts on his, you know, those injuries, are those concerning to you at all? Or do you think he's on the right track?
I wouldn't say those are concerning to me. I really wouldn't. I mean, those seem like just he's dealing with nicks here and there. Obviously it sucks because you don't want to miss time. But to me, he played week one and week two for the Jags. And I think this past week, he just was dealing with a little bit of, you know, issues with his health and, this physical health, I should say. I'm not really too concerned about that. I think, like, I if he takes a physical and everything comes out fine, then we should just trust that everything is on the right track with his medical prognosis.
You think he's going to start outside? Now, we talked about this preseason. He's obviously a 6 foot, 204-pound guy, lean, long. I think they keep him outside, obviously. And A.J. Bouye coming back off IR, I feel like they kick him back inside where he was at camp. You kind of feeling the same way on where they'll play him rotationally?
Yeah, that's an interesting question because I wasn't prepared for them to play J.C. Horn inside as much as they did. I don't know, because again, it's really tough to kind of gauge like what is going to happen whenever these in-season trades are made, just because like you're immediately throwing them into the fire and you don't want to put too much on their plate. You just want to like simplify things for them. So if I had to guess, I would probably say he would go outside because I feel like playing inside, it requires a lot more preparation because you have to prepare for the receiver to go on an inside or outside route, like those option routes. Just have to like kind of really understand the technique that they're asking you, not only to play in coverage, but also what the receiver wants to do. So if I were like a betting man, I would guess they're playing him outside because I believe that's where they played Rashawn Melvin against Houston. And they did a lot of like zone coverage to Melvin's side just to make things very simpler. I'm assuming that they won't ask Henderson to do that if he does play, whenever he does. I think they'll probably do a lot more man coverage with him. And I think he's really good. Another good follow is Lori Fitzpatrick. She writes for, she works with Doug Farrar. She covers the Jaguars too. She's been posting a lot of clips of Henderson. He does a lot of really good work off man coverage, where he's like breaking towards the ball or he's like reading the receiver's routes and either going with him like on a post or following him upfield. So check out her Twitter timeline too, because she's been posting a lot on Henderson. So yeah, I think they're going to play him outside of.
Yeah, I agree on Lori. Lori Fitzpatrick, Touchdown Wire, does a great job. I love her stuff. The compensation, Arnold's interesting because I was looking at the snap counts this year. We've seen a lot of Ian Thomas on the field, but not a lot of targets. What else is new, right? He's up to .124 with the snap counts. Arnold had 82. Trimble at 60, but he's emerging now. He had the nice sort of wing sweep there on the touchdown and is doing a great job in the blocking game. Also had the YY verticals in that Texans game. Big play down the field. What's your thoughts on Dan Arnold being a part of this compensation and then the draft picks? How do you equate all that in terms of value from your end?
Sure. Good question. So Dan Arnold, I thought he had a pretty good game. He obviously had a really good game against the Saints. Like him and Darnold, you know, a little bit of chemistry, especially on third down. I thought he had a good game against Houston, too. It was the second drive of the game. I think it was like a first and 10. And Dan Arnold's running through that cover two hole wide open. But Darnold just completely like misses him. And we'll get into, you know, how Darnold played later. But I thought, you know, he had some opportunities to really kind of mark here with this franchise, Arnold, the tight end. And I'll be honest with you, I'm a little concerned about the tight end position because, I mean, with all due respect to Thomas and Trimble was still, he had a good game, don't get me wrong, especially catching the ball. And I couldn't be more excited about his potential long-term. But there were a couple other plays during that game where he did not do his assignment in the run game, especially like blocking on the perimeter, especially when they do those outside pin and pulls. Like he has to like down block a guy or get upfield like 4 yards and get the angle right so he can, you know, allow one of the running backs to just go off his shoulder. But he didn't do that. He whiffed a few times on those. Now, to his credit, he did bounce back. And I think it was fourth quarter, he managed to really land one of those blocks, and I posted a clip of it, so that was encouraging. But I just think Trimble is a guy that I'm a huge fan of, but it's going to take a little bit of time for him to really settle. So I'm a little concerned that, well, maybe they know more than I do, that they are more excited about him. I don't know, maybe they Jaguars really wanted Dan Arnold, so they, in order for this deal to go through, that's what it took. But I'll be honest with you, because the Panthers are utilizing a ton of play action, especially in the intermediate part of the field where tight ends become very useful. I would be lying to you if I said I'm going to be a little nervous about the this position.
Well, it's an interesting trade, Billy. Good, great insight as always on the CJ Henderson front. We'll have to see. I know one scout I talked to back during the preseason had talked about Dante Jackson being the least preferred option in the slot because of the physicality and the tackling skills Phil Snow wants inside. And I think you talk about the tackling inconsistency with Henderson. I think that that's one indicator that among many, I think that he'll play outside. Bouye, I think, will kick inside. But they'll rotate guys, as you know, and it'll be interesting to see how they balance that. Because J.C. Horn, that was a tough one. As we get into the Texans game here, we're going to break this down. Obviously, the Panthers are 3-0. There's a lot to feel good about. They're on top of the division right now. It's been a minute since that happened. So fans are excited. I think I'm a little cautious, to be honest with you. It's good to feel good. I'm with you. But some things in that game did concern me. I'm sure you agree with me. I think some things offensively were a little rusty. I'm looking for Robbie Anderson in the passing game. I haven't seen him much. I haven't looked at the tape, though. I know you probably have a little more than I have. Give me your opening thoughts on Carolina's third win of the season at Houston.
I think whenever you travel on the road on Thursday night, you take the win wherever you can get it. I don't care who you play. I don't care if you're playing San Jose State. You take a win whenever you can get it on the road on Thursday night. And as great as the win was, it was very costly because of the injuries that occurred to not only Horn, but it looks like they dodged a bullet that McCaffrey's injury is not very severe. So that's a good thing. Okay, offensively, my issue with that game was it came down to some of the quarterback I did not feel played very well in the first half. Okay, now he made some pretty big throws, but his processing at times, it needs to get better. Because I'll be honest with you, I'm actually more impressed with his accuracy than I thought I would be, because he was throwing the ball where he should throw it. And I was concerned just as that overall accuracy would be an issue here, but he's pretty accurate. The problem with him is that he's not processing the field quick enough. And I just mentioned that Dan Arnold play where he's running down the seam for a touchdown. And there was another guy open too. It was Robbie Anderson running a deep in route, a dig route. And then there was another play in that same drive where they get that completion. Remember that long hitch route to DJ Moore? It was like 20 yards and Aikman was making fun of Houston's defense.
Yeah,
they had that same play available to them for like another 15 yards on that drive. But Darnold came off the read too quickly and just checked it down to McCaffrey. He's not going to have that luxury to check on McCaffrey for the next couple games. So he needs to really speed up his processing, because to me, I made this point on Twitter, and I want to reference what someone said. It's a good friend of, someone that I listen to. I know you listen to him as well. Nate Tice of The Athletic. He does a really good job of covering the NFL. He mentioned that, I think he was on Bill Barnwell's pod, and what he was asked by Barnwell was, is this Darnold reclamation real, or is he kind of scheme dependent? And essentially this is what he said. There's zero fat on what he has to read now. Everything is very simple. There's naked play action. Everything is one side of the field. The scheme has made him look competent. The egg is a scheme and the chicken is Darnold. So I made a similar kind of comparison. I said that what I saw, especially in that Houston game, was that he had, he was kind of being led in a similar way to how Shanahan has like Garoppolo on keys, or how McVay had Jared Goff on keys. Like everything was just very structured and it has to be very conservative. And I don't like that personally. I feel like I want to see the quarterback elevate the offense too. Now, to his credit, Darnold did play better in that second half. But to me, there's just still a lot missing about this offense, where it's very structured in the passing game. And that's, I want to give credit to the offensive staff for making it like that, because they're still producing over 400 yards. But at some point, the quarterback also needs to elevate the talent, because he has some good receivers, and we can't just continue to blame this offensive line. Yeah, they had their issues, but a few of those sacks were on Darnold for holding the ball too long and not protecting the ball. Those fumbles were on him. He's fortunate. None of them got recovered by Houston, and that's not a very good Houston defensive line. So he needs to speed up his processing. He needs to help this offensive line out just as much as they need to help him out. So it's just a collective thing. And again, the scheme is really helping him, but he's going to face some better defenses, and he's obviously not going to have McCaffrey for the next few games.
Yeah, let's talk about that. It gets harder with Dallas. Obviously, they're making some strides defensively now. I'm seeing some of what they're doing with their new linebacker Parsons there off the edge. That's somewhat terrifying because he's now rushing the passer, and that's impressive. And I think they've done some good things to clean that up. And obviously, offensively, they're one of the better teams in the league right now in terms of moving the ball vertically. They have a great 1-2 punch in the running game with Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard. But I guess let's just kind of stay here with McCaffrey. How you talked about Nate Tice's point. I think it's a great explanation as well as yours. And I'm curious to get your perspective because I think it does alter things a little bit for Sam now with McCaffrey out. It's just so much of what they do. I don't want to say it runs through McCaffrey, but he's so valuable, Bill. Just little things he does in terms of pass protection, getting open, getting those hidden yards, you know, after the catch, just being a great safety valve for any quarterback. And now we've talked about Chuba Hubbard's development. You know, he's still not quite there, Billy. I'm seeing it. I know you're still seeing it too.
Yes.
Royce Freeman, you know, you got blown up on a pass protection there in that game. There's some things there that do concern me a little bit. So how about it with McCaffrey? I mean, how impactful is this injury and how concerned are you long-term, not only short-term, but long-term with McCaffrey?
I'm not too concerned long-term right now because, again, the injury is very – it's pretty minor. Reports, again, say a few weeks. So it's plus he's not going on short-term IR. I think short-term IR is the three-week timetable. But, okay, so remember – you know, I spoke at the beginning of the season during the preseason where one of my issues with McCaffrey was pass blocking, but he's done a really good job of pass blocking this year. And to him, that's just, he deserves all the credit for improving in that area. Not only is he identifying the rushers, but he's also like leading in with the proper technique. So that's very encouraging. So it's going to be up to Joe Brady and Pat Meyer to kind of construct some protection schemes that help out these offensive linemen and running backs, because maybe instead of having the running back just, you know, pick up a free rusher through the A gaps, they slide the protection one way and have, you know, Hubbard or Freeman pick up one of the guys coming off the edge and help out with the one of the tackles. But to me, Hubbard still has issues running the football too. I mean, pass catching, we know it's going to be an issue, and pass blocking too. I just thought, like, his running style is very, like, I don't know. Like, he doesn't run very low to the ground. He's a very high runner, and it just – he takes too many steps past the line of scrimmage. Now, again, there were a couple, like, pin and pulls and some sweeps that they did where he got outside and he was able to kind of, you know, hit the perimeter really well. And I think that's what he's good at. Once he sees, you know, daylight in front of him, he's a very good straight line runner. I'm a little concerned about – some of the other aspects of his game. I felt like Freeman did okay. Again, he just joined the team, so I'm trying to give him a little slack, but I do expect that he should be all prepared by this upcoming week. And I think it's a blessing in disguise. They had this short week last week, but now they have a long week to prepare. So maybe these guys get, some of the issues, especially with the protections that they can, you know, really wrinkle out, can be functional by the time they play Dallas. So, yeah, I'm certainly concerned for the next few weeks, but long term, I'm not there yet with McCaffrey. But I do think I'm hoping this trend isn't like continuing to go.
You hope not. I mean, obviously, and we're getting to a pretty good place with Panthers football. We can start talking about wins, you know, at least from my perspective, not being totally satisfying. I think you brought up a good point. I even mentioned it during the game that sometimes shit happens. You just got to roll with it. Get the win, get the hell out of there. And the injuries were terrible, obviously, with Horn. We're going to get the defense here in just a second. But McCaffrey, you know, those are two guys that are cornerstones of each side of the ball, and you don't want to see them go down, but one's going to be out for the year, obviously, with Horn. McCaffrey, short-term, hopefully he comes back and picks right up where he left up. But 407 to 193 was the total yard split, 28 to 14 first downs, Carolina to Houston there. Obviously, they dominated the stat sheet. They kind of kept Houston in the game a little bit there in the second quarter. Third quarter, they came out a little better. Fourth quarter, they finished with that quarterback sneak, which I thought was nice to see the line get a nice push there along with Ricci playing a little Brad Hoover ball, getting a little push there on the quarterback. But I guess defensively, you know, Billy, you know, I just look at what they're doing, and it just continues to impress. I mean, they're 1 of 9 on third downs. You know, Davis Mills is obviously not Tom Brady, since there's going to be an uphill battle coming up in the next few weeks with the increased competency at quarterback there. But I was impressed. I thought they did their job. I think there were some coverage things you mentioned during the game that were a little bit concerning. I didn't see the tape again. I saw the live game feed, and I could see a couple things that were a little off-kilter there. I remember that one touchdown they had where it looks like nobody knew what was going on at the back of the end zone. Maybe give us a little more of your perspective defensively on what they continue to do. Phil Snow defensively, the pressure, stopping the run, and what they need to do a better job of maybe as they move forward, even though they rank first in most categories right now, there's always room for improvement.
No, absolutely. I mean, red zone defense, I think they're the worst in the NFL. They've given up a touchdown each time they've allowed an offense enter the red zone. That's a little concerning. I know we've made a big deal about the red zone offense, but the red zone defense, it has to improve as well. And so a couple things here that I noticed. So they were kind of firmly in control of this game. Houston just had a very baffling game plan, in my opinion. They ran the ball just to their detriment, because Davis Mills, whatever you want to say about him, he threw the ball pretty fine. He was getting some decent protection too, especially on the left side where they have Tunsil and Howard. I mean, the right side, I don't know what they're doing. Personally, if I'm Houston, I would have put Howard on that right side. But yeah, it was just the same thing we saw with Carolina doing. Their front was really kind of compensating for some of the issues in the back end. And I do think these issues in the secondary will be magnified now that JC is out and they're going to be facing some better offensive lines and better quarterbacks, because there are holes back there, plenty of it. And so it's just up to if an offense can really exploit it. So this defense sort of reminds me of 2013, where they had like that really good front four, and they had a bunch of like UDFAs and veteran minimum guys in that secondary, Drayton Florence, and goodness knows like who else, Mike Mitchell,
Melvin White.
Yeah. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. So it's very similar to that. Obviously they do a lot more exotic things with their front here, a lot more blitzes. So if I were Carolina going forward, I would really like, if you're going to play like this, you know, especially at the end of half situations, if you're going to play like the simple, like cover two defense, split safeties, you have to tighten up in the red zone, and that they have to get better in that area, because Houston's only touchdown drive, Davis Mills was just finding the holes really quickly in that cover two. They ran a flat seven route, which is one guy goes in the flat and holds the cornerback, and Brandon Cooks, the receiver, runs the seven route, which is a corner route. And he was wide open a few times in that, because Carolina just continued to play that cover two. So as soon as they do that, you're in the red zone now. You have to tighten up in that area. And giving up four touchdowns, I know, one of them was probably the most legit one they gave up, because which was against Houston, because of the game was still at hand. I know the other two against the Jets and one against the Saints, it was kind of like in a blowout. But still, I want to see improvement from the red zone defense. You have to hold teams to field goals, or force their offense off the field, because that's one area that I want to see the defense get better at. And that really comes down to your coverages, because how well can your coverage hold up in the back end? I think blitzing is fine, but in my opinion, when you're playing in such a condensed area of the field, dropping guys and really putting confusion in their eyes is probably a better recipe for protecting that part of the field. Just let your four guys rush. You have five really good pass rushers. So let them rush and clog up those rush lanes. Maybe you get a sack, but I would play coverage in the back end if I was Phil Snow moving forward in the red zone.
I think they're going to have to. I think you're right. They're going to have to, in the red zone in particular, because they haven't been in the red zone a lot. That's part of it too. There's only been a few trips, but they've got to tighten up there. I think Hassan Reddick, I mean, we keep talking about, what Scott Fitter has done with his roster. And you and I had talked about what an amazing deal that was in terms of the contract. I mean, it was a Matt Rhule discount, obviously. It felt like that at the time, at least. And he had, Pro Football Reference had him at 6 pressures for the game, leading the team, sack and a half. Obviously, he's climbing the charts there on the sack total throughout the year. He and Burns are right there, step for step. But I just, I called him the missing edge. I just thought there was going to be another edge player out there, because YGM obviously sort of is playing a little bit of a hybrid role. He's been a little bit dinged up. He's had some issues. Reddick has just come in, Billy, and has impressed me so much. What do you make of his game so far as a Panther.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of interesting that we haven't even mentioned this, but Dan Arnold is another free agent acquisition that they've let go, joining David Moore and Denzel Perryman. And it kind of balances out because Daquan Jones and Hassan Reddick and Morgan Fox have been so good. So you have some hits and misses in free agency, and Reddick has been certainly a hit. I mean, I don't know, like, he's just getting pressure all the time, and like, they're using him very creatively. Like, it's not even that, you know, some of the stunts that he's coming off of. I mean, he's beating guys like Laremy Tunsil with his speed, and I don't know, like, he's turning into like a pretty complete edge rusher, in my opinion. Certainly the guy that the Cardinals thought they were drafting in the first round. So, and I don't think it's just that they're using him like in a creative like fashion. Like, obviously they do the same thing other defenses do. They have him drop back into coverage here and there. He comes around on loops. But I just think like he's turning into like a more complete player. And I think that's important because there were a few times as well, especially in a run game, he set like a really nice edge. And I think setting an edge isn't just about, you know, being like a 270-pound like defensive end. It's about, you know, angles. And I think he takes some really good angles with his footwork to kind of allow some of the linebackers or the fourth player to fill on the outside. So he's just turning into like a very complete edge rusher. And I think it's pretty encouraging, whether he's here or not long term, for his own development. I would say that's a positive.
I agree. You mentioned Morgan Fox. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention him. He's been a great chess piece, Billy, because they move him all around. They play him at 5 technique. They play him in at 3 technique inside. I think that's a great signing, too. I mean, obviously, some of these signings have not panned out. David Moore gets cut. They got some compensation for Arnold. That's better than nothing. But, you know, I think, you know, with Fox and Reddick, to your point, shows some power, too. I mean, on some of these sets where he's, you know, looping inside, some of the tape I looked at last year, I could see glimpses of that. I guess everybody wondered, you know, was that Giants game sort of a fluke and were his numbers a little inflated? But there are pressures every game for Reddick. And one thing he does a good job of is he gets to the spot in a hurry, tries to get that ball out. They're always going for that ball in the backfield, and they've had their fair share of opportunities there, punching some balls out with Burns as well, doing, you know, Brian Burns stuff out there, looking great. So I think, you know, you mentioned the 2013 Panthers. I think it's a very good comparison, Billy. You know, you're talking about back then it was Greg Hardy, Dwan Edwards, obviously Charles Johnson. You had some great speed up front and also some good power inside. Now you get Derek Brown, you get Morgan Fox. A little bit of a different front, obviously, not playing a base 4-3 as we know it. A lot of that tight front that they run, even in sub-package. But it's been fun to watch this defense, and you hope they keep it going. It's a huge test against Dallas. I mean, we're going to preview that game coming up later this week and dive into the minutiae of this opponent, what they bring to the table. But it's a different ball game, and I think that's the only thing we caution fans about. And fans have been around long enough, and they understand that there's a difference between a road win on Thursday night against Houston and, you know, a bigger stage against Dallas. But I will say this, it's a nice long week, Billy. I mean, you get a long rest, you get a chance to regroup, and Dallas is on a short week. So any final thoughts from your end as we sort of look forward to the next quarter for the Panthers here?
Yeah, I just want to say, like, last year they also had a 3-game winning streak, and a lot of people thought that their defense was pretty legit at that point, too. Remember, because they shut down Kyler Murray and the of Kingsbury offense, and they went into they shut down Justin, or they played really well against Justin Herbert, and they went in Atlanta. So they had a 3-game winning streak last year. So how different would, I guess, the narrative be if they started with those 3 games last year and just then they went through their kind of their losing streak? So for the key for this franchise now is not to get into the complacency that had them lose like what was 6 or 7 in a row last year until they finally beat Detroit. It's about really proving that you're not a fraud. I mean, to be completely honest with you, because you beat Dallas on the road, that's a pretty big win. I mean, I don't care what anyone says. The week after, you're playing Philadelphia. I think Philly is much better than people give them credit for. They have a great defense. Jalen Hurts is still like an ascending quarterback, and I think that their offense, especially the scheme of it, is going to be very difficult. And that the week after that, you have Kirk Cousins, who's playing like a top 3 quarterback in the NFL right now. So these next 3 weeks, it's really going to tell the story of this season. Is this team for real, or did they just go through a very favorable part of their schedule, because I want to believe that they're good, but go prove it against these three teams and maybe you can really shape the narrative, because I know a lot of people are getting upset at some tweets that are going around from, you know, analytics guys and how serious should we take Carolina. Win these games and people will take you seriously. I think that's kind of my mindset. I'm just kind of, you know, letting everything play out. They've done their job to date. You can only play the opponent in front of you, and they've done a good job winning those games. I think the Saints win looks very excellent in retrospect, given how the Saints just dominated the Patriots and the Packers. So beat Dallas and potentially even beat the Eagles and Vikings. I mean, the entire season in front of you.
Prove it. In other words, just prove it. I mean, I agree. As I close out my final thoughts here, I think back to the 0-2 Panthers. I mean, we're going way back here, and the game has changed a lot, but they had a similar game in the fourth week against Green Bay, very game opponent, playoff team on the road, and they fell short. Obviously, it was a Shane Graham field goal at the end that fell short, or fell wide right, I think it was. But that was sort of their measuring stick, and they went on a terrible losing streak after that. A lot of close losses, but that's kind of where this team's at a crossroads now. You're sort of in the echelon where you make a trade like this with C.J. Henderson. You know, obviously it's not an all-in chips to the middle of the table type of trade, but it's a trade you make if you think you're a playoff type of team. And I think they're feeling they're ahead of schedule now. Now it's time for the team to go prove it in Dallas against one of the better teams in the conference. So I'm eager to break it down with you later this week. Billy Marshall, as always, enjoyed it, my friend.
Yep, thank you.
All right, guys, we'll be back later this week with another episode of The Roar. We're going to preview Dallas with a special guest and talk much more about this Panthers team as they take shape at 3-0, heading into Dallas. John Ellis, Billy Marshall on The Roar Podcast, right here on Blue Wire.